Tam ambagacchan drutta vikramam shatim ekam trinetra nuchara sahasrasa saparsada yaksha maniman madadaya puru visindastarasa gatavyata. When they saw Sati leaving alone very rapidly, thousands of Lord Shiva's disciples, headed by Maniman and Mada, quickly followed her with his bull Nandi in front and accompanied by the Yakshas. Purport. Sati was going very fast so that she might not be checked by her husband, but she was immediately followed by the many thousands of disciples of Lord Shiva, headed by the Yakshas, Maniman and Mada. The words Gatavyata used in this connection means without fear. Sati did not care that she was going alone. Therefore, she was almost fearless. The word anuchara is also significant, for it indicates that Lord Shiva's disciples were always ready to sacrifice everything for Lord Shiva. All of them could understand the desire of Shiva, who did not want Sati to go alone. Anuchara means those who can immediately understand the purpose of their master. Text number 5. Tamsari kakam dukadarpanam bhuja. Sveta tapatra vyajanasra kadibi. Gitaya nirdundubhi shankarenubir. Vrisindra marupya vitankita ayu. Translation. The disciples of Lord Shiva arranged for Sati to be seated on the back of a bull and gave her the bird, which was her pet. They bore a lotus flower, a mirror, and all such paraphernalia for her enjoyment, and covered her with a great canopy, following by a singing party with drums, conchals, and bugles. The entire procession was as pompous as a royal parade. Om Jnanati Manandasya Jnanana Salakya Chakshura Militam Yenatasmai Shri Guru Venama Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dalyadati Swapanam Tikam. So Sati was now determined to go, totally overwhelmed by the mode of passion. Therefore, she just really tried to leave the house very quickly to avoid Lord Shiva, and had now lost all thoughtfulness, and therefore all deep intelligent deliberation. It is said that activities in the mode of passion lead to distress. Therefore, we can understand that the chapter is now taking a turn for trouble, coming soon. It is described how when the disciples of Lord Shiva, who were very much in the mood of being the servant of Lord Shiva, could see that Sati was leaving alone in that way, at least they thought, although they didn't approve of her going, because it was against the will of Lord Shiva, still, they knew that Lord Shiva was the well-wisher of Sati, and therefore they accompanied her. And subsequently, it is described how they made a royal parade. It is not surprising that Sati went in a royal parade because of the extraordinary position of her husband. Immediately, the followers of her husband were giving her a befitting escort for her position as the wife of Lord Shiva. So here we also see an indication of like Lord Shiva's exalted position, which is something that Daksha could not recognize, because Daksha was also in the mode of passion. Daksha was very attached. He was attached to the fruits of his activities. He was attached to his dynasty. He was attached to his position as the patriarch of a particular dynasty, and therefore considered himself the head of that dynasty. And that was a very important thing to him. And therefore all his activities began to center around his prestige and position. Such attachment is also a feature of the mode of passion, and equally so will lead to distress. Therefore now both Sati and Daksha were heading for a distressful reaction as a result of acting in the mode of passion. So we also tend to act in the mode of passion again and again. Therefore, it is very important that we are always acting in consultation. Because whenever we rely on our own inspirations and our own feelings, then we are prone to act at times inappropriately under the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance. And this is a problem. Therefore, a Vaishnava, by nature, will always consult. That is the program. Vaishnava means one who is taking shelter. Vaishnava is one who is bowing down before the Supreme Lord, bowing down before the representative of the Supreme Lord, or the representatives of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, bowing down means to submit to the will of these personalities, to accept guidance. So this is an important principle for coming out of the mode of passion. Within the mode of passion, we don't want to accept guidance in our life. And therefore, even in spiritual life, if we are in the mode of passion, or may I call it the mode of attachment, right? If we are in the attached mode, attached to the fruits of our activities, then we are reluctant to accept any interference in our life, because we have already beforehand decided what we want. So, since we are attached, then if someone comes with a directive that is different from our own desire, then what? Right? So better avoid instructions, avoid involvement, and so on. This is the sentiment of one in the mode of passion. And this tendency is to be overcome. This is part of conditioning. We are conditioned in that way. And that conditioning has to be overcome. So therefore in spiritual life, we have to be ready to accept that we ourselves are full of fault, and that basically our habits are wrong, and that many things that we have been doing for many years and that we are accustomed to have to change. That is spiritual life. Otherwise, we are in trouble. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there is a description of Devananda Pandit, who was a commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. And it said Devananda Pandit grew up with Srimad Bhagavatam. And Devananda Pandit was trained with Srimad Bhagavatam. And Devananda Pandit learned to give classes on Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning of his life. But there was only one problem, that at one point he was explaining it from an impersonal perspective, describing the Supreme Lord as impersonal. So, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was disturbed by Devananda Pandit. Later, Devananda Pandit became purified and he became the servant of Vakreshwar Pandit, who was one of the great intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vakreshwar Pandit was always ecstatically dancing in kirtan, and somehow or other Devananda Pandit became very impressed by him and began to serve him. And it said, at that time, Devananda Pandit also received the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at one point, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed him and told him how to lecture on Bhagavatam. So, that is interesting, because we are also lecturing on Bhagavatam. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Devananda that, he said, when you lecture on Bhagavatam, right, you should only explain it in terms of bhakti. Right? Only. You should understand that the Bhagavatam is dealing in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end with bhakti only. And nothing but that. That is the only topic that is being discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. So therefore, that is the topic we are discussing. Let us not become bewildered and think that we are discussing anything else. We are discussing devotional service. And therefore, when we are discussing this verse, we are discussing it in how it relates to devotional service. So we're seeing that the consciousness of sati was a defect. And it was a defect in this case. So this is important. So here we're seeing a description of a state of consciousness which is a defect in terms of bhakti. So that is the principal purport for us to understand that here, in the description of this pastime, that there is a defect, and that there was also a defect in induksha. All due to attachment, due to undue attachment. Both sati and daksha were unduly attached. So we have to beware from this, for this undue attachment. Therefore, vairagya vidya nidya bhakti yogam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has stated about the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that it is a mission where vairagya or renunciation is an essential fundamental element. Without it, what can we do? We require vairagya. We have to be in that spirit of becoming renounced. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janatya Savairagyam. It is said that knowledge and renunciation are automatic byproducts of engaging in devotional service. So we must therefore with great force, with great enthusiasm, take up devotional service. Because then it will come. It will come. But at the same time, we must also act in a way that is favorable, supportive activity. Yesterday, I also referred to the Nectar of Devotion, to the commentary of Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in particular, where he states that that bhakti is made up of different aspects, and there is direct bhakti and there is supportive activity for bhakti. So we need this supportive activity for bhakti so that bhakti can flourish. That is required. Once one reaches bhakti, then one becomes transcendental to all these things. And we're seeing that sometimes great devotees were also doing things that we could not understand. The Bamsidas Babaji was said sometimes smoked a hookah, which is a big water pipe, right? Seen in Indian villages, right? So how is it possible? A great Vaishnava. So anyway, he was totally transcendental. He did all kinds of things, of course, that were inconceivable. He was constantly speaking with his deity. constantly. He was always carrying his deity around the neck in a cloth. He was constantly absorbed in transcendence, and would not even respond to people when they'd speak to him. He was very much an avaduta, very much one who is not adhering to normal social customs and practices, but who was simply acting on the platform of Krishna. That is another matter. So for such devotees, the secondary activities may not be so important. But it is stated that a devotee who is on the transcendental plane will never act against the pleasure of the Lord, and therefore naturally will never act sinful. He's automatically sinless, because such sinful and degraded activities are not pleasing to the Lord, so it would not even enter his mind, because everything in his mind is Rishikesha, Rishikinam, Sevanam, Bhakti, Ruchate. Everything is aimed at satisfying the senses of Lord Krishna. That is the idea. So this is the state of detachment that a devotee must attain. Whatever can be done for the pleasure of Krishna, that is the most desirable thing. Is clearly displaying some of the womanly tendencies to become overwhelmed by the motive passion. This sometimes happens, right? When one is inclined to act upon feelings spontaneously without thought, then one can easily become overwhelmed by the motive passion, especially as long as one is a conditioned soul. Therefore, women are oftentimes very much overwhelmed by the motive passion. And therefore, sometimes we need to call upon the intellect. Right. Think about it. Wait a minute. See the logic. See the arguments. Okay. Yes, I see. Then again, passion. Slow down. Just relax. Our statements that are sometimes required, and this is not in a yesterday I also made the point. I'm not speaking at all in a condemning way. We are not interested in placing one particular conditioned soul above the other conditioned soul. Our interest is that all conditioned souls, men or women, are ready to deal with their weaknesses so that they can become eligible to go back to Godhead. Right? So therefore, we need everyone to simply become introspective and to recognize, yes, I am full of weakness, and therefore the women should do so, and the men should do so, the children should do so, the old people should do so, everybody should do so, because this human form of life is rarely attained, and it is to be used for going back to Godhead. But at the same time, we have taken a low birth. It is a fact that the female birth is not classified in the scripture as high birth from the spiritual point of view. So we can, of course, get upset about that and say, what? You know, how dare you say such a thing, you know? Put the women down again, right? We've gone through this through the centuries. This has happened so many times. But that is not the issue. When we are dealing with Bhagavad Gita, it is Krishna who is speaking. So Krishna has no desire to put the woman down. Right? Krishna is simply trying to pull us out of Maya. Krishna is not coming to this world to establish male superiority. Krishna is coming to this world to deliver all the conditioned souls, male or female. So if Krishna is pointing out striyas tata vaisya sudras, that these are the women, the vaishyas and the sudras, are those who have taken a lower birth, okay, we must simply accept, well, okay, so what to do from that position, how to become purified, and that is the essence. So we're discussing purification, and that is our aim. So purification must be in the center of our life. We may not be able to totally, on the strength of the intellect, to control our natures. That is the best platform. It is said first class is to learn by hearing. Second class, to learn by experience. Third class, to not learn, even by experience. So, first class means that when we hear an instruction, we can accept. Second class means we just can't make it on instruction alone, but from experience we can do. Third class, we get all the instructions of the world, and then we get all the experiences, and still we cannot follow. So third class is means very much affected by the modes of material nature. So third class is not really suitable for practicing bhakti yoga in the mode of goodness. Third class means cannot come to the mode of goodness. Will stay in the lower modes of material nature. Will, in spite of all knowledge, not be able to act upon prescribed duty. First class and second class, or a combination of the two. The second class person must aim to become first class. Okay? So must try, instead of learning by experience, learn by hearing. And from learning by experience in the past, we must understand that we should have learned by hearing in the first place. Right? Because we heard it and we didn't follow it. But then we got the experience that it is a fact. Right? And therefore we see that the knowledge that we heard in the first place was correct. Then from that we should learn that in the future we should learn by hearing. Obviously. Yes. And that means the mode of goodness. So that is our, that is required, that we can come to the mode of goodness. Srila Prabhupada, set up a system in this movement, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, to offer diksha, and then upanayam, then the brahminical initiation, right, which brings one closer to the Lord. The whole idea of second initiation, upanayam, means to come close to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by being very close to His desires as He expresses them in the scriptures, and to really make that a priority. In other words, to make a commitment to prescribe duty. That is second initiation. To become strong with one's mind. This upanayam means that one comes to the point where one says, to hell with the mind, to hell with the senses, to hell with all these things. That is upanayam. Upanayam means one becomes strong. One is no longer having soft gloves and say, oh yes, poor, you know, velvet gloves and say, poor mind, yes, yes, I understand you are feeling so upset. Oh, my dear senses, oh, yes, 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 you are again so much agitated. I know, you want something, and I'll definitely give you something, don't worry. No, that is... Then we stay at a distance of the Supreme Lord. So upanayam, or coming close to the Supreme Lord, means that we become firm. To hell with the senses, right? To hell with the mind. Yeah. Yes. What can I say? This is the spirit of our acharyas, right? Who had no time for such things? So, that is the purpose, that we are going forward in coming to the mode of goodness. So this movement in particular is meant for that purpose. It is a movement. The intention was that everyone becomes eligible. The intention was not that some exceptional personalities would become brahmanas in this movement. The intention was that some exceptional ones might not, right? But that the majority of the movement would have to become qualified according to Brahminical initiation, right? Which means exactly that, upanayam, right? Prescribed duty, commitment to prescribed duty, pravitim cha nivritim cha, being very knowledgeable as to what to do, what not to do, what is prescribed duty, and then doing it. So, both men and women are meant to come to this type of initiation. It is very interesting that in the Vedic culture, there is no question of ever giving women a Brahminical initiation. Women were not receiving second initiation in the Vedic culture. So we see that although Vedic culture is offering an intricate system of purification through sanskaras, through certain regulated purificatory duties and rituals that are being performed, along with each ritual were certain duties and so on. So in spite of all that, right, that it wasn't sufficient to give women this Brahminical initiation, because they were not able, through that process, to conquer this tendency to go into the mode of passion. But the process of devotional service is stronger. It is more powerful. And therefore, in this process of Harinam Sankirtan, through the process of Pancharatra, even women can be given this second initiation. Just see. See the superior power of this Sankirtan process over the regulated process of the Vedic sanskaras. Right? So we're going beyond that. Right? Beyond that. This, because this Sankirtan is not some purificatory process. It is more than that. It is the constitutional position of the living entity. It is relating to the platform of the soul, and therefore to the platform where we are neither man nor women, but where we are simply spirit souls engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord. So that is the position. But that is only possible if we take the activity of the soul, devotional service to the Supreme Lord, very serious, and come to the point of ahaitaki apatiyata, 24 hours uninterrupted devotional service. We sleep for Krishna, we rise for Krishna. As soon as we open our eyes and we look at the clock, then we should think, is this for the pleasure of Krishna? Right? We look at the clock and just look at the time, and we should think, is this for the pleasure of Krishna? right? And if it says 8 o'clock, what do you think? Right? If it says 6 o'clock, what do you think? If it says 5 o'clock, what do you think? If it says 4 o'clock, what do you think? If it says 3 o'clock, what do you think? If it says 2 o'clock, what do you think? And so on. All these times can show on your alarm clock. And as soon as we open the eyes, we can think, is this pleasing to Krishna? Think for yourself. That is all that is asked from us. One big problem in our movement has been that in the ashram, there were many people who did not make a commitment to prescribed duty. Has become a big problem in our movement because it has forced the other half that, or the other percentage, the other group that did make a commitment to prescribed duty to become policemen, to become police agents, to police the ones who don't commit to prescribed duty. Yeah? And to make sure, get up, Mongol Arctic! And if you don't come to Mongol Arctic, then, you know, like, we're gonna, you know, boot you out, and everyone in Mongol Arctic gets coupons. Hansa Dutta system when he was president of Vrindavan, right? Smart, right? Smart system. Only in Mongol Arctic could you get a prasadam coupon. Huh? And if you, he was handing them out in Mongol Arctic. And if you didn't make it, no prasadam coupon. And at the door, at the town, prasadam, real big guard, you know, coupon. Coupon, no coupon, no prasadam. That's interesting approach. But not the spirit. Not the spirit. Because Brahmana means independent. Brahmana means above the law. Brahmana means he is not under the Kshatriya king. Brahmana means he is responsible on his own. Even if he's all alone somewhere in the, you know, everybody is gone. Jai, they've all gone to Radhadesh. You're the only one in the temple. Jai, alone at last. Phew. Right. Today, you know, no alarm clock, right? I'll just sleep as long as I like. I'm gonna do everything I want today. It's gonna be good, 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 good. Right? Yeah. But that is not Brahmana. Because Brahmana, he is not being, the standard in his life is not peer pressure or social pressure. The standard in his life is simply, what is my responsibility towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and my spiritual master? And that's his only consideration. And what can be said? Nothing more. It's up to us individually to understand what our duties are. All right, new devotees need to be trained and need to learn. But more mature devotees need to train themselves. They themselves have to go to what is called in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the mine of the scriptures. The mines of the scriptures. I like that, that metaphor of the mines of the scriptures because it indicates that you have to work yourself, right? It's not like, you know, it's all brought to you and here it is, you know, no. The minds of the scriptures means you have to go in there, deep inside, and dig, right? And perspire, and work hard to take out the jewels, right? It's not just gonna be available without us working. That is what it means. That is what Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami means to say, with the minds of the scriptures. Right? So it is an interesting metaphor. And very descriptive. So it puts the responsibility on us. And that's the reason why I'm referring it to it in this particular context. Because the whole thing that I'm addressing is simply our own individual sense of responsibility to Krishna, to Guru and Krishna. Right? That's it, you know. And that's what should be our driving force, right? Then there's purity. Right? Otherwise, you know, it's like, and then relationships also work. Because otherwise we're gonna feel that someone is harassing us and someone else, and those who are turning into the police of the others feel harassed by having to be police, right? And those who are being policed feel harassed, right? By people who push them. And then our whole movement becomes like an intense institution. And we've had that already, right? We've had that already. We've already had this model. And, we don't like to fall back into this model, but then it does require that everyone becomes very serious about his personal commitment to Krishna, to Guru and Krishna, right? And to scriptures, because otherwise, the whole thing goes down to the mode of ignorance, right? That's the risk, you know. Maybe when there was army boot camp with police and those who were policed, right? Maybe in those days, the atmosphere was very passionate, right? But the standards were quite spiritual, right? Now, right, we have two options. We have options to have an atmosphere that's very much in goodness if we make our own personal commitment, or we have an atmosphere that's totally in the mode of ignorance, right? Where everyone just does what he likes, right? And it's obviously not what is in the scriptures, because if we follow the mind and the senses, then we're not so pure yet that we like that our natural likes are completely synchronized with what is in the scriptures. That is not necessarily the case. So therefore, everyone has to take responsibility himself to overcome the lower nature. That is to be done. And the scriptures offer certain formulas, offer different ashrams, offer different ways of doing it. But still, everyone has to be an example. That is Brahmana. Therefore, Brahmana is independent. See, Brahmana is not a herd animal. Right? You know, we have to see this principle. The herd syndrome. Right? The herd syndrome. The herd syndrome is very strong in people. Right? That everyone is looking, what is everybody else doing? Then I also do that. So this is a big problem in our movement. I heard some interesting observation that we all know that New Vrindavan had been out of ISKCON, right, for a number of years, and that at that time they started their own program, and it went quite far because they were singing translations of the songs in the forest of Vrindavan, where Radha and Krishna meet. And many other reason, many were wearing robes, orange robes, and, you know, and then New Age philosophy came in, right? We had, instead of Alice in Wonderland, Radha in Wonderland, and there were so many things, right, that were going on, and there were some TP people living on, and God knows what else was going on. Anyway, whatever was going on, there were many sincere devotees also, who somehow or other stayed there, because they had been there for a long time. They were attached to the deities in the temple. And it said at one point, many of these devotees desired to return to ISKCON and Prabhupada's way of doing it. But it was difficult. And they were like thinking it was very difficult. So then eventually they surrendered. And they came back to ISKCON. And in the beginning, right, they thought it was really tough. because they were imposing very high standards upon themselves. But then after a little while, they looked around and they looked at the other devotees and said, oh, they're not following that. They're not following that either. Oh, well, then we don't have to follow it either. And the standard came right down. Yeah. So, it is a fact that we have to, of course, there are still many devotees in New Vrindavan, you know, who must be very strict devotees, good devotees, and so on. And I'm not at all, this was not criticism of New Vrindavan. It was just pointing out that in general, all of us, devotees of this era, right, have this inclination to act according to the common denominator, to just follow the general standard, what everybody else does. A brahmana does not do so. A brahmana, he himself, right, enters deeply into the scripture and lives by his own conscience and by the conscience of superiors. So brahmana is very much following the scriptures, and he is like making it a point that he is the living, the personification of the scriptures. Right? And you may wonder, but why are you giving a class about being brahmana when we are actually speaking about sati? Right? Aren't you drifting away a lot from the topic right now? Right? And shouldn't you just go back to the verse and the purport? No, I'm right on target. I'm right on target. I haven't deviated an inch from the purport at all. I'm totally on target because the point is that sati is acting in the mode of passion. Right? And our solution to it is our commitments to being brahmana. Right. We have first of all described the problem of the mode of passion, right, in the beginning of the lecture, and then, you know, how much time after the problem has been identified, how much time are we going to spend with the problem? Therefore, now I am addressing the solution, right? And the ultimate solution, I have stated, is devotional service, right? Because that will automatically take us to the transcendental platform. But until then, and to support that, we very much require this brahminical commitment. So, it's just a point which is not like meant to be some kind of a chastisement. This lecture may also be taken as a chastisement. Oh, he's chastising us. He's thinking we are not brahminical enough, right? And now he's getting on our case, right? No, it is not that. It is just calling for something deeper, something more fundamental. Calling for a sense of taking so much responsibility to act according to the desire of Krishna, to the desire of the spiritual master, the Sampradaya, and so on, that even if everybody else is doing something else, that we still stand. Right? Yes. That is important. That we are thinking for a moment how we are individually responsible in our relationship with Krishna. Everyone flies his own plane, Prabhupada said. Right? So this is important.